Good morning, Oregon. Thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the shipwreck of the Brother Jonathan, possibly the most historically significant sidewheel steamer in Oregon state history, the one that brought the telegram announcing to the state that it had become a state, which sank just off the border with California in 1865, right after the Civil War, with a bunch of gold on board. This is the story of the sinking and also of the subsequent squabble over salvage rights to that gold. The story was first published on January 9th, 2011, under the headline, Shipwreck of Brother Jonathan is Ground Zero in Fight Over Treasure. All right, here we go. On the afternoon of July 30th, 1865, 3-year-old Charles Brooks suddenly burst into tears. Charles was staying with his grandparents in California's Napa Valley while his mother, Mrs. A.C. Brooks, and his aunt, Mary Place, journeyed to Portland. Charles had been perfectly happy there until a little after 2 p.m. when he suddenly melted down and would not be consoled. His puzzled grandparents did the best they could, but he would not stop crying. All they could get the little guy to say was something about his mother and Aunt Mary going down in water. More than 300 miles away, just off the Oregon-California border, Charles' mother and aunt were drowning, along with 223 of their fellow passengers on the sidewheel steamer Brother Jonathan, in the cold waters of the North Pacific. If the article I got this story out of in the next week's Oregon Statesman newspaper, the source of this account, is to be believed, somehow little Charles knew. The Brother Jonathan was a 220-foot paddle-wheel-driven steamer built in 1851 in New York and owned for some time by Cornelius Vanderbilt. Like many other East Coast steamers, it had been brought around the Horn during the latter days of the California Gold Rush. It became an important ship in Oregon history. In 1859, it was the Brother Jonathan that brought the message to Oregon that it had been admitted to the Union as a new state. This was especially symbolic since Brother Jonathan was the name at the time of an imaginary mascot for the United States, kind of like Uncle Sam. It was that mascot that the ship had been named after. Well, the Brother Jonathan's last day in the sunlight came 6 years later. The steamer was on its way from San Francisco to Portland with 244 passengers and crew. On the way, a storm tormented the ship and eventually got bad enough that the captain, having gotten as far as Rogue River, turned the ship around to bring her back to Crescent City for safety reasons. On the way back, a particularly lusty wave picked the Brother Jonathan up high, and the following trough spitted the ship on an underwater granite spire. It began to sink immediately. The first of the Brother Jonathan's complement of Francis Patent metallic lifeboats, launched to the storm with about 40 feet aboard, had just pulled away from the wreck when a breaker roared over it. When it was next seen, it was upside down. The second lifeboat didn't even make it that far. A wave crushed it against the hull of the Brother Jonathan before the crew even had the oars out. The only survivors of the disaster were 19 people in a small surf boat that somehow made it to shore. As for the others, a classified ad in the daily San Francisco newspaper Alta California put the crassest possible epitaph on their watery graves. Quote,
"We venture to say that everyone on board the Brother Jonathan would have been saved if they had had Houston, Hastings and Company life-preserving vests," it clucked.
Considering that many of the bodies that washed up on Oregon and California beaches after the wreck were sporting life vests, this claim was certainly questionable and was in terrible taste. But there may have actually been something to it. At the time, many life preservers were stuffed with tulle, which provided minimal flotation and eventually became waterlogged and dragged a person down. I have not been able to learn if the Brother Jonathan was equipped with tulle-stuffed life jackets or not, but in water as cold as the North Pacific, that question is close to irrelevant. In 50-degree water, cold is the real killer of shipwreck victims. You get in that water, you got about 15 or 20 minutes. A common version of this story has the captain of the Brother Jonathan noticing the ship was dangerously overloaded but sailing away anyway after being told he'd be relieved of command if he did not. This is possible, but I have not been able to find any credible original sources for it, and it would be somewhat out of character for the captain of a major passenger ship to allow this sort of interference with his command, and it would not be easy to find a commanding officer to replace one who had quit under these conditions. After the wreck, the beach was littered with debris washed up on shore, including the ship's wheel, which can now be seen in the lobby of Dan and Lewis's Oyster Bar in Old Town, Portland. But plenty of other things didn't wash up on shore. In the hold of the Brother Jonathan was a substantial shipment of gold, intended to buy off the territorial claims of a number of Native American tribes. Naturally, treasure hunters wasted very little time in getting to the scene. For well over a century, nobody got anywhere with these efforts. The range of ocean in which the ship might have gone down extended from Crescent City on the south all the way up to the mouth of the Rogue River in the north. Nobody knew for sure where it was. In the 1930s, a fisherman pulling in his net found a crumpled rusty mass in it, an old Francis Patton metallic lifeboat. Wedged under one of the seats, the fisherman claimed was a rotten leather valise containing 22 pounds of gold. I use the term claimed because something about this story isn't quite right. Leather doesn't last 70 years under 250 feet of seawater, especially not in a crab fishery. Unfortunately, private possession of gold was illegal at the time, so the fisherman hid his find away. By the time gold ownership was legalized again, he couldn't remember where he'd found it, or so he claimed. As you likely have already noticed, the presence of gold in a story has a uniquely corruptive influence on stories relating to it. It's entirely possible that the whole fisherman story is a complete fish story. But it wasn't until 1993 that a high-tech treasure hunting expedition actually found the wreckage of the ship in about 250 feet of water. And this touched off a legal argument over salvage rights to historic shipwrecks between the treasure hunters and the state of California, in whose territorial waters the ship was actually found. Even after the U.S. Supreme Court found in the treasure hunters' favor, the state persisted, basically harassing them until it was bought off with a share of the treasure. Really, it's easy to say this from, you know, up north here, but it seems like conduct unbecoming a state of the U.S. Union. Coins from the Brother Jonathan shipwreck are on the market today, by the way, and can be bought from an outfit called Austin Rare Coins and Bullion. Well, that's it for today's episode. If you're listening for the first time and want more information about Offbeat Oregon, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. You'll find about 180 columns going back to 2008 when I first started doing these, plus links out to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and links to the Facebook page and Twitter feed if you'd like to get in on the conversation online. There's even a link to the Amazon page for my book, Wicked Portland, the Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, which came out earlier this summer. The website's also where you'll find full citations to stories from this story, which include a book by Don Marshall and newspaper articles in the Boston Globe, the Oregon Statesman, and the Portland Morning Oregonian. All these columns are covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Details are at offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band, written by Carmen Ficarra, atlasstringband.com. Coming to Corvallis, drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, at offbeatoregon. But that's it for today. So thanks for listening, and have a great day.